Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Hey, good morning to 909 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Had some fun guests this week, including Congresswoman Celeste Molloy yesterday, and we talked with Adam Snow, Dave Romer was here, Sean Christians. It's been a great week, and I appreciate you listening if you did to any of the previous shows, and I'm glad you're here today. Mello is with me today, my Friday sidekick. She's Robin to my Batman, I guess, or I don't know, Jimmy Olsen Peter Parker to my, the Superman guy.
Sidekick, I like it, it's good.
What is his name?
Robin? Batman and Robin?
No, the Superman's alter ego when he was
Clark Kent.
Clark Kent, I could not shake that out of my brain. I knew, I kept saying Clark, and I'm like, no, Clark can't be right, can I?
Yeah, it is, yeah, you Clark got it. Kent. You know this, you
okay.
Got it.
We watched a little bit, my wife and I, when they had Smallville, the little Superman as a youth, I guess. But I'll always be, you know, the Superman to me was Christopher Reeve. Mm-hmm. And that will always be, you know, that's part of who I was growing up. And probably you too, right? Were you a Christopher Reeve Superman fan?
Yeah, I liked it. We actually have the whole box set on DVD.
Oh, nice.
I hate having to watch it and then watch the stupid ads they put in the middle for 30 seconds. I know it's ridiculously small amount of time, but
it's true.
I'll just pay the $4 if I don't have it on DVD.
Nice, yeah. So, and then it was, what was his name that played the bad guy, played Lex Luthor?
Oh, I do not know his name. I can see his face.
I can see his face, too, yeah. But anyway.
I can't remember. Gene somebody?
Was it Gene Wilder?
No, it's not Gene Wilder.
No,
I lied.
Gene Hackman. That's it. Gene Hackman.
Okay. Together we got this. That's
yeah,
good
you
together.
Got the Gene, I got the Hackman, we're good.
Clark and Kent, we're that's right. Peanut butter and jelly.
I wanted to talk a little bit about marriage today. I am very, very pleased to announce, and you, anybody that's listened to the show knows, I am so proud of my wife. She's an incredible person, and she has to be to live with me, right, for all this time. But
she deserves an award.
Married 30, it'll be 37 years in October.
Congratulations, it's coming
so,
up.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But I wanted to talk a little bit about marriage. Now, people that have been married a while know this, but maybe those who haven't been married a while or are getting married or maybe still trying to figure marriage out need to understand that the love that you feel, the infatuation you feel when you first meet someone and fall in love with them, it's still back there somewhere, but that's not how a marriage works. I mean, that can only get you so far. You know what I'm saying, Mello?
I do. I hear you loud and clear.
And that's why everybody's, the old world, they used to arrange marriages, right? Especially the Italians, they would arrange marriages and your parents would tell you who you were going to marry and it was oft times someone you didn't even know. And, you know, and then you have the love story, Romeo and Juliet, the love stories where they buck the arranged marriages and they fall in love and all that stuff. But I got to tell you, being married is not, it's not something that you can just take for granted. It's not something that is just there. You work at it.
Right. It's not easy to be married as somebody who's been married several times.
Can you turn your mic up just a little bit? You said.
Is that better?
Oh, yes. Much better. Thank you.
Yeah. It's hard to be married. And I've been married a couple times. So I've done it right and I've done it okay. And we'll see if I can keep going. I don't know. It's a hard thing to be married.
Now, first of all, I want to kind of a disclaimer. There are reasons for divorce, infidelity being, in my mind, the foremost. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say everyone that's had experienced infidelity should get divorced. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've always believed that if infidelity, especially persistent, consistent, over-the-top infidelity happens, then you probably need to move on, right, and find
a way. They're probably not going to change, in my experience.
You found that out the hard way.
Yeah, so my first husband was a serial cheater. And I was married for, I think, 7 years when he first cheated on me. And
7 years, that's it, huh?
Mm-hmm. They call it the 7-year itch for a reason, probably.
Yeah, Marilyn Monroe, right? Yeah.
Right, yep. So anyway, I don't know if you want to hear more about it, but
sure.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
So he had an affair, just like kind of a romance, not a real full-fledged affair, with one of our neighbors who was one of my friends.
So, like an emotional affair, but not necessarily that physical?
Well, maybe making out, but not all the way.
Okay.
So, actually went and talked to our clergy there and was trying to decide what to do. And I had looked up scriptures and I was like, this is why I'm leaving. This is why I'm leaving. This is why I'm leaving. I think I was 24 and had 4 kids.
Oh my gosh.
And I lived back east and I was like, I cannot do this. This is not what I want for my life. Mm-hmm. And I was convinced that I should give him another chance and let it try and make it work. He really wanted to make it work. So how do you fix a marriage? I don't know, maybe have another baby. So
that doesn't work, by the way.
I know, I know. So I did. I had another baby. And then he just got really good at hiding it.
Mm. So instead of fixing it, he just got better at being sly and sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Yeah, so he hid it, and then he hid it for a while.
Like years?
For years, yeah. I didn't know. Like, I knew something was off, but I couldn't put my finger on it.
Now, your husband was a military guy, so he was traveling a lot, right? So he was kind of picking up girlfriends in the different places that he would go.
Yeah, so, like, I found out later that when he was in Spain for 3 months, he had a girlfriend that he lived with there. Mm. When he was in training in Colorado and I lived in Utah, he had a girlfriend that he was living with. Her name was Chris. And I was writing checks to Chris, in quotation marks, for half of his rent. And it was a girl named Christina.
Oh, so he lied and said, oh, this is a guy that I'm helping support or whatever.
Right. I'm living with this guy while I'm finishing these financial advisor courses. And then I'm going to move back and be with you. And then I'll be out of the military forever. But actually, he never did. He just stayed in the reserves and just kept having affairs. And then finally, the icing on the cake. There's so many icings on the cake.
Yeah, you it goes told me on this and on. One, though. While you were pregnant, right?
Well, one of the ones. Okay. So I've got to kind of fast forward. So it all came to a head at the very end, almost the very end, when I was in his email. And I saw a picture that he had sent to somebody that he probably shouldn't have sent to somebody.
Oh, boy.
So I said, let me see your phone.
So this guy's a piece of work.
He's pretty fun. Mm. I said, let me see your phone and I can tell you what's going on. I can figure it out. Just let me see your phone. He's like, oh, Mello, I have to tell you something. And so I have to do a little zinger because that's how I am. I'm like, you're gay? He's like, why do you always say that? I'm like, I don't know, just for fun. And then he proceeded to tell me that he had a child that was a year old. I had a child that was a year old. So there
He had a child with one of his mistresses.
Right. And he had hidden it from me for a year.
Wow.
Yeah. So I said, well, plans have changed. I'm going to go to my mom's and you're going to stay here with the kids. And you can pack up your stuff. And when I get back, then I'll have you leave and we'll just get divorced and we can be done. So I get back after the weekend, and he's gone through the whole garage, like, getting all of his stuff sorted out. And he came across some pictures and got sentimental, and he's like, I love you. I really want to make this work. Can we please, please?
Wait, at this point, you didn't.
Well.
You didn't forgive him.
I really loved this guy.
I know, but.
So here's what I did. Uh-huh. I said, because I thought he would never come clean. I said, there's no way we can make it work because you are only admitting to what you get caught with. So if you'll go ahead and tell me everything, wipe the slate clean, then we could go to counseling and then I could see maybe making it work. But with all the lies, there's no way I can make it work with you. And he's like, oh, I can't. I'm like, that's fine. Don't. Like, just leave. He's like, oh, okay, I'll show you. So we go down to the computer and he opens up a secret email. And it was what they call a trophy for these kind of guys. It was a trophy of all of the women he had relationships with over the years.
Can you give me a ballpark number? How many?
Probably about 13.
Ooh. In 20 years?
Yeah, that was probably like 15 years, 16 years.
16, wow.
Yeah, but I found out there that he had a relationship, an affair with one of my best friends.
Ooh.
In another state. One of my family members.
No.
Yeah, so I had to tell the other family member, and that was another big.
Awkward.
Yeah, it was awkward. Mm-hmm. And so then we gave it one more try, and I even let him see his child that he had with this other person. And and what he would do, so I moved back to Colorado with him. I'm like, if you cheat on me one more time, you have to move me back to Utah and let me have a divorce in Utah. So he said, okay, I'm not going to cheat on you. Yes, come back. We'll live here. It'll be great. It was good for a while, and I was going back to school. I was trying to finish up my degree. And so he would take the kids, and because we had six kids, he would take the kids and like take them out so I could study at the house. So my daughter came back from one of these nights out with her dad and her siblings, and she's like, Mom, I have to tell you something.
Oh, yeah.
So he would go there and he would meet up and accidentally bump into somebody that he knew that was a woman. And it was one of the affairs that he'd had. So he would have this girl come in on their date with his kids.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, it was not fun. And I'm very lucky to be out of that situation. So finally, that was the straw that broke the camel's back pretty much. And I was like, hey, wow. I'm out. You can have all your other kids and all your other lives and wives.
You endured a lot. Some would say maybe too much. Maybe you should have kicked them to the curb, you know, earlier. But right. I'm glad you did it, at least finally.
Right.
You know, cover your senses.
It's hard when you have six kids.
Yeah.
You don't
have
an education. You've been a stay-at-home mom for 20 years.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're kind of like, I take this or I don't take this. Can I make it? But I made it. And he always told me he was holding me back, and I never, ever believed it until I got out on my own and I can do so much
he
more.
He was.
Yeah. So.
So in the news, speaking of divorces, J-Lo and Ben Affleck are breaking up. Their marriage is over after it was only a couple years old. But so, you know, talking about divorce and thinking about your divorce and J-Lo and Ben's, or what do they call them?
Bennifer,
yeah, mm-hmm. That one. You're like, ah, man, the whole world's getting divorced. But I found an article online. This is pretty cool. Talking about marriages, Hollywood, high-profile Hollywood marriages that have actually lasted.
Oh, some good news. Thank you.
Yeah, so I got a few. Matthew Broderick has been married to Sarah Jessica Parker since 1997. Do the math on that. That's 27 years. That's pretty good.
I didn't realize they were married. Okay.
Yeah. Kevin Bacon and Kira Sedgwick met in 1987. Yeah, 1987. Got married in 1988. They have been married the same amount of time as my wife and I, 36 years.
Nice.
Okay, how about Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson? I don't necessarily love Tom Hanks' politics, but the dude met Rita Wilson in 1981. They got married also in 1988. They've been married for 36 years and still growing strong. Check out this quote. This is from Tom Hanks. He said, "In real life, our connection is as concrete as me sitting here. Not that marriage doesn't come close to being hell in a handbasket sometimes, but we both know that no matter what, we'll be with each other and we'll get through it."
I love that. And that's what it is. It's teamwork and working together for a common goal, your love.
Couple of others, Ted Danson, you know, Sam from Cheers, Ted Danson, and Mary Steenburgen, and have been married since 1995. That's 28 years. Mm-hmm. Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Michelle Gellar, you know, she's what
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah. They met while filming I Know What You Did Last Summer. And they planned, let's see if we can get down to where they got married. They got married in 2002, so 22 years they've been married. And you can say what you want about Ozzy Osbourne. He's a little crazy, he's drug-addled, whatever. But Ozzy has stayed by Sharon's side, or maybe the reverse is true. Sharon has stayed by Ozzy's side since the 1970s. They've been married for 40 years.
Wow.
42 years, actually. 1982, 42 years. They have been married. And it's so funny because Ozzy Osbourne is kind of the ultimate bad guy, right? I mean, Black Sabbath and the nightmares and the biting a bat's head, which he really did and got sick from it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But on stage, somebody threw a bat on stage. He bit its head off. And this is a real story. You don't eat a raw animal. And he got sick and got taken to the hospital after the concert. Anyway.
Oh, that's disgusting.
And one more, David Beckham. No, two more. David Beckham and Victoria Beckham have been married since the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one, Tim McGraw and Faith Hill. You might call them the first couple of country music right now. Tim McGraw and Faith Hill have been married since 1996.
Yeah.
28 years they've been together. They have three daughters, Gracie, Maggie, and Audrey. And a kind of a special recommendation for them. Their kids don't have weird names. Their names aren't Blue or Purple or
Apple
or Monkey or Apple or something like that. Yeah, Maggie, Gracie, and Audrey. That's cool.
And then also Dolly Parton has been married a long time.
Right.
52
right.
years.
Yeah. Now her
Carl
husband,
Dean.
Her husband was a, I think a record producer or something, but he's an unknown. No, I mean, most of these that I mentioned that both spouses are famous, but you know what I'm going to do here? I'm going to move this microphone so I can see you. There
Thank
we go.
You. That was weird. Your eyes were a microphone.
There was a big old microphone right between us. So, I guess what I wanted to do was just kind of come out in praise of marriage. And the fact that it is not, it starts out as infatuation and love, romantic love, but as you get into it a few years, you have to transition into, okay, is it worth it for me to put work in and effort in to stay with this person? And in my case, absolutely. In fact, early on, I always tell this, and I believe it 100%. When we first got married, my wife and I thought, oh, she's so lucky to have me. And a few years in, I'm like, oh, we're so lucky to have each other. And in the last few years, I realize now, I'm so lucky to have her.
That's the truth, right?
The tables have turned, and I understand. And it's probably always been this way. It just took me 30 years to realize it. I'm pretty lucky to have her. So, and I know you have, you are married to a different man now, mm-hmm. and you are quite happy in your marriage, yeah?
Yep. So I remarried, 8 years ago?
Yeah.
And I really didn't think I was going to remarry because I had 6 kids.
Yeah, nobody wants a lady with 6 kids.
I didn't think anybody would remarry me.
Yeah.
So I was glad that he said, okay, let's get married.
Now, how old was your youngest when you got remarried?
I believe she was like 5 or 6.
Oh, really? Yep. Oh, so she's only like 14 or 15
she's
now?
She's 14 now, 14? Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And then I married a guy with no kids, and I kind of dated guys without kids on purpose.
Really?
Because I, in my mind, thought maybe that would be easier for my kids to acclimate without having, like, siblings, step-siblings.
Well, this isn't hypocritical, is it? That you would
expect them to date
you with kids and you're dating them without.
Right? I know. I'm my ex-husband said he never thought I was good at chess until we got divorced. So,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. In my mind, I was looking for my kids, either not remarry or marry somebody without kids to make it easier for them. But then I ended up marrying a 40-year-old bachelor who had no kids. And so it was a really hard transition for him because he went from having no kids to having teenage girls.
How many were at home?
I had 5 at home and then one went on his mission. And so then I had 4 at home.
And then, but then you and him had another one. You had an ours. You had yours. Now you had ours.
Yeah. Well, he wanted to have a baby, and I didn't think I would get pregnant, so I agreed. And then I was pregnant in 2 weeks.
How old were you?
I was 40. I was 41 when he was born.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was surprised.
And now you can't imagine life without him.
No, he's the best. We love him so much. He's really like the glue for all the kids to like have something to love that's from both of us. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's pretty special.
That's pretty cool. My wife and I talk about this a lot. Our friends of ours get divorced. We see people get divorced. I have a friend who was divorced recently, and I was kind of beside my when they were going through troubles. He came to me a few times. He's like, "What should I do?" I'm like, "You've got to fight for your marriage. You've got to put the effort in." And I'm like, "I mean, was there cheating? Did anything?" He said, "No, nothing bad happened. We just aren't getting along."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "You've got to put an effort in. Whatever it is that you're fighting about, find a bridge, build a bridge, and figure out how to resolve it together." I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm not saying she's wrong. I'm saying maybe you're both wrong. Maybe neither one of you is wrong. But find a way to bridge that gap.
Yeah.
And sadly, within, 6 months after that, he moved out and they announced they were getting divorced. And it broke my heart because there was a child involved and they had, they had a lot going for them,
mm-hmm.
and all it would have taken, in my opinion, now I wasn't there on a daily basis. I wasn't in their home on a daily basis. I wasn't there while they were fighting. But in my opinion, all it would have taken was a little more effort on both their parts,
yeah.
and they'd still be married, and that kid would still have a dad at home.
I know. That's what's so sad. Dave gave me really good marriage advice. Dave here at the studio.
Yeah. Dave Hyatt.
Because it's a second marriage and it's challenging because I want to control what's going on with my kids, but then he wants to stay. So it's really hard to navigate that as a step family. And so he just told me to not let everything bug me and not let it be a fight. So if my husband says something that I don't agree with, but he's still doing what I want him to do or what we agreed to do, then don't nitpick at how he's doing it and just let that go. So that's been really helpful.
They say in every couple, there's someone who loads a dishwasher perfectly neatly and orderly and another person who loads a dishwasher as if it's a pile of junk out there in purgatory. I'm guessing in your family, you are the one that loads the dishwasher perfectly and neatly, and he's the one that does load it occasionally, but not the way you want it. It's not worth criticizing the way he loads it, right?
Right. That's what I have to let go. I can't. Let it go. If he's doing what needs to be done, then I can't micromanage how it's being done. And that's a control thing that I need to work on, obviously. So
I love being married. I love my wife. I love the institution of marriage. And I think that people that dismiss it as being old-fashioned or whatever are missing the point. There's something about committing yourself to this other person, and when you take those vows saying, I'm going to do whatever. And I know, like I said, I'm not condemning anyone that's been divorced. Mm-hmm. There are reasons, but if you will make that commitment, when you make it, you get married, you can work through just about anything. So I think Ethan is right there. Is he?
Yeah.
Is he not?
Ethan,
come on in,
he's
Ethan.
He's coming in right now. I see him.
We're going to talk with Ethan for a minute about the Teton Wealth Group. Now, Teton Wealth Group has been here all week long, and we're kind of doing a blitz because we want people to get to retirement age or think about retirement age and understand
right.
that you really can't do it on your own, not efficiently, and you guys are willing to help.
Well, and here's the thing as well is, do you want to be doing this in retirement? Is your purpose in retirement managing these things, calculating your, you know, your Roth conversions and your QCDs and RMDs?
No, that sounds terrible.
You know, the purpose you want to live in retirement.
I want to be on a cruise ship, yeah.
Yeah, do you want to be researching all the changes in Medicare and all that stuff? No, you need a team to help you execute this. You can live your purpose in retirement because at Teton Wealth Group, when you're living your purpose, that becomes ours, is to help you just enjoy these years. So we use the Ascent Plan to accomplish this. Every family we work for has an Ascent Plan. We developed this process to serve our client families. We'd like to do one for you. There's no cost, no obligation. This is how we want to introduce you to Teton Wealth Group, introduce your family to Teton Wealth Group. We're a presence here in Utah's Dixie for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
We just really wanting to kind of get out and get a little more exposure. We're right over here on 30 East, just north of the Sun Bowl there in the Hinton Burdick building, if you know where that is.
I've been there a few times.
And so it's a lot of people use that firm. So call right now, 435-255-6331. That's 435-255-6331. Let's do an Ascent plan for you. It covers your income plan, your investment plan, your tax plan, your health care plan, your estate plan. We sit down, we walk through all those areas, we show you in each category what you're doing well, what needs work, and a couple of tasks we think will move the needle for you. And then you take that home. There's no cost, no obligation. If you want to work with us past that, great. If not, all of that's going home with you. And I know it's going to bless your life. Included in the Ascent Plan is a copy of our book, How to Retire Without a Financial Advisor. So whether or not you're going to work with us long term, you're going to have the tools that you need in a way that you never had them before. Because remember, having a there are a lot of great firms that can get you a conservative portfolio, and that feels good, but that's only one-fifth, only 20% of a real retirement plan. So make sure that you get the other four-fifths in place. 435-255-6331. We're just doing our last couple this week. 435-255-6331, no cost, no obligation.
Ethan Miller from the Teton Wealth Group, and I can tell you folks, I've been in there. I sat down with the guys. They put together an Ascent plan for me. And the thing I liked about it, Ethan, too, I went in there and I said, look, you're not ready to retire. I knew that.
Yeah.
But they're like, you know, when you are ready to retire, bring this plan back in, probably in a year or two or three, and we'll help you out.
Yeah.
And I felt like, you know, instead of a high pressure, you go to like a car salesman, you know, they're like, it was like, here's the plan. If you want to use it, go for it.
We let the math drive the conversation. So 435-255-6331. I know you'll love this experience. It'll really bless your life.
Thank you, Ethan. Good to talk to you today.
Thank you, man.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 9:35 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Thanks for tuning in. Mello is here as well. Mello D. Finlinson, if you want to go technically.
Technically. My dad likes that better, Mello D.
I got to clear up. People, I get asked, you wouldn't believe how often I get asked this. They're like, hey, that Mello you talk to during the Rolling Stone commercial, is that Melody? Is that the same person? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, wow, that's so cool. And I'm like, I guess. I don't know. That's actually how we first met, though.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I used to go by Melody a lot more.
Has that been a year now?
It's been a year. I think it's February a year ago.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're with us, Melody.
Thank you.
It's good to have you along for the ride. Hey, have you ever heard the term farm tough or country strong?
I don't know.
Yeah. So it's usually used in sports terms. I remember, a decade or two ago, the Hurricane football team was really, really good. And everybody was going to what they call the spread formation, the quarterback back in the shotgun and taking a snap in the air and then four or five wide receiver every play. And anyway, Hurricane bucked the trend. They're like, no, we're going to run old school football. We're going to run these little trap plays. Power eye type, and I don't want to get too deep into the sports part of it, but basically their scheme was based on execution and toughness.
Okay.
And what they did was they made it to the state championship 4 years in a row. Actually, I think five in a row, and they actually didn't win until the last one, but they did win a state championship, and they made it to the championship game all those years in a row by being country strong or farm tough. And it was inspiring. Coach Chris Homer was the architect of it all, but it was inspiring because they didn't succumb to the flashiness of modern football. They just played old school football, and they had these kids that a lot of them grew up on farms or orchards or whatever, and they were just tough kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. And, you know, I had the opportunity to cover them. Sadly, a couple of them have passed away. One of the kids had leukemia, Brian Scott. And maybe the greatest football player ever to play at Hurricane High. And when they had his funeral after he passed away, there were thousands of people showed up. There were cars lined around all over town for his funeral. And Brian was country strong. He was farm tough. And so I found this article online, very cool article by Ray Craig. It's on intellectualtakeout.org, entitled Farm Tough. And I'm going to read you a couple of paragraphs, and I want to kind of get your take on this as we go through this. Again, this is Ray Craig. He said, recently, my 10-year-old son Eric made a play in his baseball game that I was particularly proud of. He didn't strike out the side or make a fantastic stop in the field. He didn't smash a double down the left field line. No, it wasn't a remarkable play at all. You see, Eric was hit by a pitch on his arm while batting. What pleased me was how Eric casually dropped his bat and sprinted to first, similar to what he would have done if he drew a base on balls. It's sad, but this behavior from a young boy is now about as rare as one of those kids knocking a grand slam over the fence. He goes on to say, for whatever reason, most young boys now cry and make a scene if they suffer any pain, however minor, on the field, usually carrying on until the umpire or coach runs out to attend it to them. Before long, mom and dad are rushing on to the field, and the kids from both teams get into the act by kneeling to show respect to the injured player, similar to when they take a player off the field on a stretcher during an NFL game. The commotion quickly comes to a close when the youngster miraculously shakes off the injury and finds his way to first base. I look to the ground and cringe at the overreaction whenever this happens. Now, I'll state up front, there are occasions in sport or life where real injuries require real attention.
Mm-hmm.
But the point this Craig guy is making is we have gotten to the point in our society, in life, where we're kind of soft on our kids, and they've taken that to go, you know, if I make a fuss, I'm going to get a lot of attention, and they'll probably buy me an ice cream after the game, and my mom and dad will come onto the field, and they'll make a federal case out of this, and we'll hire a lawyer and sue the other kid, the pitcher's parents, and I mean, that's what's happened out there, and it's kind of sad.
Yeah, people are really soft, and I don't know, it's hard for me because when my kid gets hurt, then the first thing I want to do is go and
we all do, yeah.
Pick him up.
I got to rescue you. I got to help you.
Yeah, my husband's a little better about that. He's trying to make him tougher, which I appreciate. So he's like, you're fine. Let's go. Get up. You can do it, you know, and not babying him. And I want to baby him.
Sure.
So maybe there's more single households and moms are babying kids more. I don't know.
Could do that.
I don't know what it is, but we do overreact a lot more. We're not as tough as like Gen Xers. I'm not sure what other generations there are before that, but.
So I had a, man, how do I term this without getting myself in trouble? I had a relative of mine who said, so in the news right now is a controversy over whether kids should have cell phones in school, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this relative of mine basically said something to the effect of, they will never take my kids' cell phones away. My kids must have their cell phones at every minute of every day so I know where they are and so they can get a hold of me if they need me. Now, this is a person who was raised by traditional parents who had traditional... everything about this person screams, you know, okay, I need to do... what's traditional, what is, you know, what authority says.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no, we ain't doing that. And I was kind of stunned. I was like, wait, so if your school has a no cell phones in class policy, you'll take your kids out of school? Or, I mean, what will you do?
Yeah, what's the extent?
And she was like, well, I don't know what I'll do. We'll see. We'll cross that bridge when they come to it, so to speak. But she said, They're not going to take my kids' cell phones away, period.
Then your kid needs to have their cell phone in their bag, I think. They have a policy at my daughter's school right now, mm-hmm. and I don't know where they're implementing it across Washington County, if it's just in Snow Canyon Middle School. But it's cell to bell, or no cell from bell to bell. So the kids can't have their cell phone, and not even during lunch. And they said part of the reason, I read the letter about it, is because also that's when kids are bullying others. It's like passing a note about somebody
mm-hmm.
that's right in front of you, and you can just laugh about them, and they're
look
all
around. Look at so-and-so and what they're wearing
right?
today.
Can you believe what, she's wearing that again? Yeah. Or look at her hair, or mm-hmm. look at his mm-hmm. shoes. Or so I think it's great. And honestly, my daughter, who's 14, I recently actually took her phone away from her. It's been about a month and a half. Since she's had it, and she's almost, she's changed so much. She's actually spending more time with us. Before, she was always scrolling.
So your 14-year-old right at this moment does not have a phone?
No.
Wow.
No, it's challenging because, like, she would like me to come pick her up, but I can't pick her up because she can't text me.
Yeah.
So she has to walk home. We live really close to the school, so it's okay. But I think that it's helping a lot. And I have a house phone, so she can call her friends or call me from home if she needs to. So it's making a big difference, and I'm gonna maybe give it back to her, but in increments. I talked with her therapist about this, and we're gonna just give it back to her in the evenings for like 2 or 3 hours and limit the time, and she's not allowed to have it in her room either, period. So we're really coming down on it. It's better for her mental health to not have the phone.
I was always of the belief, and we failed on our last child, that they don't need a phone until they're 16. And the only reason they need a phone when they're 16 is that's when they're driving, and there might be an emergency situation where they might need a phone. And we did really good. None of our kids had cell phones until they were 16, until our last one. And at that point, we had transitioned as a society away from home phones. There were no more landlines.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got an extra line that we were going to have kind of be the phone that stays home all the time, so that if anybody at home needs to get a hold of somebody, they have it. Well, our fifth child decided that, oh, look, an extra phone. I will adopt this phone as mine.
Mm-hmm.
And she did it at like 13 or something mm-hmm. like that. And so that was the only rule we broke. And I have to say, I guess I didn't have a strong enough backbone to say, no, 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 you will not. I mean, we mm-hmm. tried for a while, but after a while, we're just like, yeah, whatever. So, but, you know, not to, make this totally about phones, but I do think that parents need to have a backbone. And I think we did a good job. And I think a lot of parents are trying very hard to make sure their kids understand that that phone is not something they should be looking at, 24/7.
Right.
We had, a rule in our house. You, at bedtime, you docked your phone. You charged your phone out in the living room. and did not, you couldn't take it into your bedroom with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like that was fairly successful. I also made my kids sign a contract. I said, when they did turn 16 and we got on the phone, I put a contract and said, you will not use the phone for this, 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 and this. You will park your phone every night out here on the dock. If you break these rules, your phone will be taken away. And every one of my kids signed that contract. I thought that was important, too.
That's
so,
very good. Yeah. One of their arguments before for my kids were, I need my phone because how am I going to wake up in the morning?
It's an alarm clock.
Yeah, so yeah. I bought an alarm clock,
good
like an
you.
Old-fashioned one. And I had to set it and teach her how to set it because nobody knows how to set a real phone or an old alarm clock anymore.
Well, and school kids will say, well, my phone has, you know, notes that I write myself. My phone has a calculator. My phone has, you know, if I need to look something up, I can Google it or whatever. So I need that for class or I need that for whatever. And it's weird, but the truth of the matter is when I was in school, it would have been nice to have that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to go back. We've got to say, no, that's not, it's not worth the trade-off.
Yeah. And I do think that we need to kind of toughen up the kids a little bit. We're too,
agreed.
Everything
agreed.
Is too easy. I think they're really entitled and they don't ever get told no, because everything's so plentiful, really. Like if you want to go out to, like going to McDonald's used to be a treat for my family. Mm-hmm. I remember that was a treat.
Yeah.
And now they expect it.
Yeah.
They're like, and I want a shake with those fries, please.
The guy that wrote this article about his son getting hit by the pitch is also a business owner. He said, I've struggled because I have these 20-somethings, and they want to work from home. And I said, well, I need you in the office. And they're like, well, I can do just as good a job at home. And he said, at one point, it was a few weeks ago, he said, I had one of my young people, he's a 20-something-year-old guy, and he said, I'm going to work from home today. And he called me. I'm going to work from home today. And he said, why? We need you here. He said, well, it's raining. And the guy's like, so? You only live two blocks from here. And the guy's like, yeah, but I don't own an umbrella.
What?
So I can't come in today. I'm going to work from home.
That's a literal snowflake.
I mean, seriously. Holy cow. And the guy was like, he said he was stunned. He was literally sitting on the phone going, I don't even know what to say to that.
No, and you don't, because they just expect that you're going to do whatever they say. It's not even like, as the boss, that you're the authority and they need to ask.
Yeah.
It's just telling you.
You're exactly right. He wasn't asking his boss. He was telling him, I'm going to stay home today.
Right. If you'd like me to work, then this is what I'll do from home.
Do we sound like a couple of old curmudgeons?
Oh my gosh, a little bit, but it's just the experience, I'm sure.
I got to get a break in. We'll be right back, Andy and Mello.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
All right, welcome back. I'm Andy 950 on KDXU. Mello, this is a little bit controversial what I'm going to talk about here for a second.
Fine.
But I feel like I need to talk about it. We're going to talk politics for a second. Okay, so think about America right now. They just finished a Democratic National Convention. America right now is in the midst of an undeclared recession. Most American people are fed up with Biden's proxy war with Russia in Ukraine, also fed up with the whole Israel-Hamas thing. A large percentage of the U.S. population is opposed to, or most Americans are thoroughly disgusted with Biden's open borders policy that has facilitated the invasion of tens of millions of illegals and tens of thousands of violent criminal illegals into our country. Plus, Donald Trump survived an assassination attempt, giving him victimhood status, which in today's America is a very desirable commodity.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of the assassination attempt, he gave the appearance of strength and leadership. So he got up, you know, raised his fist and said, you know, stay strong and fight. And America, you know, Ronald Reagan was attempted assassination of Reagan, and he was elected twice in both blowouts. So it seems like everything is pointing to Trump winning. Right?
Mm.
He's got it's a slam dunk, right? He's a shoe-in, a piece of cake, right?
I think so. They didn't even want Kamala.
Well, here's the problem. If you try to talk to someone who is a liberal or a Democrat, and you lay all that out for them, you lay out the border, you lay out the economy, you lay out all these things that I just talked about, and their answer is almost invariably the same thing. Yeah, you're probably right about all that, but I can't vote for Trump.
I have heard people say that.
I can't do it. But Trump seems to be the thing that a lot of... Oh, yeah, but Trump. Mm-hmm. And the argument is not without merit. Trump is... First of all, Donald Trump was a great leader. I think he was a great president. I think this country was incredibly prosperous during the 4 years of him being president. Mm-hmm. But he has mean tweets, right?
Oh, I love his tweets. They make me laugh.
But I don't think they're intended to be funny, some of them. I think some of them are just intended to be mean. He calls his opponents names, like stupid.
Okay, I don't like name calling.
He is at times belligerent and egotistical. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm saying this as a Trump supporter, by the way. There are people listening there go, oh, this guy hates Trump. No, I don't hate Trump. I think Trump will be a fantastic president. And I pray, oh, my gosh, I pray that Trump is elected in November. But it almost feels like, Mel, that he is trying not to get elected by the way he acts sometimes.
Yeah.
Like I've had this conversation with my wife. I'd be like, you know, Trump is a great leader, and I think he will be a great president again. And she's like, yeah, but why can't he just scale it back a little bit on all the stuff that people don't like about him, like the mm-hmm. ego and the meanness and stuff.
Yeah, I know. But it's kind of like who he is. And that's also what some people really like about him, and that he's so anti-establishment that he's just going to call it like he sees it. So that's the other side of that coin. I don't know. I think that he could tone it down. See, I haven't been following it since around the assassination attempt. So the last I saw of him, he was a lot calmer, more mellow, just a little nicer. So I haven't seen as much. I did see he said something about Barr on a tweet that was mean but funny. So
yeah.
I don't know. He doesn't say what he should say, but that's also part of his charm.
See, I think those of us that support Donald Trump, none of what he does is going to change that. And I think that for the most part, people that hate Donald Trump, they're not going to change their minds either. But sure. I think there's a big group in the middle that are trying to say, I cannot vote for Kamala. But at the same time, they're going, I really can't vote for him either.
Right.
So and those people are up for grabs. And mm-hmm. Kamala, as wicked, I think she's wicked, as terrible as she is, she kind of threw a little olive branch out there to the people in the middle saying, come on over to my side, I can help you out.
Yeah, didn't she say something, because I haven't been following it super well, didn't she say something about setting the prices in the grocery store?
Yeah, that's, oh my gosh, that's a whole separate issue.
Okay, but that's what makes me super irritated with her.
Price fixing in mm-hmm. the history of mankind has happened in China, in the Soviet Union, in Venezuela. It's happened over and over again. It does not work. It leads to shortages. It leads to price gouging. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
So she and even members of her own party have told her, yeah, you shouldn't talk about that.
Okay.
That's not going to work. So, but I guess the point I'm trying to make here is I wish that, and you mentioned it's not who he is, but I wish that Trump would figure out a way to reach out to those people who are wavering, those people in the middle, those people who understand that Joe Biden was a disaster and that Kamala Harris is maybe perhaps worse.
Mm-hmm.
I wish he would figure out a way to reach out to them and say, you know what, I know that you haven't liked me in the past, but I think that I can fix things for you. Yeah. I mean, it's so obvious. You look at the economy
mm-hmm.
and what's happened the last 4 years compared to where it was 4 years ago. You look at all the things that are in Trump's favor. It should be a landslide. It should be easy. Mm-hmm. But Trump's not making it easy, I don't think.
So I have a quick question. I don't know if you can answer it, just to kind of like help me understand.
Okay.
How did it work out that Biden was the nominee and then he just assigned somebody else the nominee? Did all the delegates just vote for Kamala because he said to? Or how did that work? I don't understand.
Well,
that.
If you ask Politico experts like Jimmy Keston, people who follow it very closely, you will see that what they did was not the way it's written. It was illegal.
Okay.
He should not have been able to just give it to her. All the delegates had already voted for him.
Mm-hmm.
He can't give the delegates to Kamala. It doesn't work that way. It's never worked that way.
Okay.
But he did. He can't give the money that he fundraised for him to be reelected. He can't give that to Kamala to help her campaign. But he did.
How?
I
need to understand. How are they going against all the rules and having it still work? I don't get it.
I don't know. I don't know how they're getting away with it, but they are. But the thing that we've learned about the Democrats and the liberals is they will speak falsehoods. They will talk illegalities, things that are wrong. And if they say it enough times, it's like the old George Costanza quote, it's not a lie if you believe it.
Mm.
And they say it enough times and they believe it, and then it becomes truth, or it becomes legal, or it becomes
so
okay.
Weird.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how there's like a set law. You do this and then you do this, and then that's who the delegate is. But then they can just change it because they decide to. I don't understand how that would work.
Yeah.
If you're a Republican.
It's not supposed to, but somehow they get away with it because they say so, and there it is.
There you go.
So I did get a tweet. If Trump could just speak on policy and how to rein in inflation instead of his same old talking points, he could gain more traction. That's exactly what I'm talking about, and I appreciate the tweet again, or the text, rather, confirming what I've kind of been trying to get at here is I think it's there for the taking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Kamala Harris really has done herself any favors in stuff about price fixing and, you know, saying that I'm going to fix the economy. The one that you created, you mean? That one? That's not working either.
Yeah, they've been saying that they are trying to recover from COVID. They're calling it the COVID inflation problem now.
they're trying
to spin
it.
Yeah,
COVID, yeah. It's unbelievable. And the border thing, I mean, what American isn't concerned about what's happened at our border and the millions of illegals coming across? And it's changing the face of America.
Mm-hmm.
And Kamala was the border czar. She was in charge of the border. I mean, President Biden appointed her. You're in charge of the border. Do something about it. She didn't do anything about it. She didn't even visit.
I know. That's so sad.
So
Not surprising, but sad.
You're right. So I think there's a golden opportunity for Donald Trump to keep. There are going to be Trump haters that will never change their mind.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be Trump lovers that never change their mind. There are some people in the middle, though, that right now the opportunity is there for Donald Trump to get those people on his side.
Yeah, I hope it happens.
Yeah. All right, Mello. Been a pleasure hanging with you.
Thank you. So good to see
you. Always good to talk to you. And, that's it for today. We'll be back on Monday, 9 a.m. Actually, I'll be here at 6 a.m., and we'll talk to you then.